Nothing more convincing, actually, than looking at children talking about their learning environments and how it's changed their life. I love the casual way they just thought, because they were being taken to BAFTA for the day, they might as well remake Brighton Rock, but be in it themselves as actors in a rather spectacular way. What's interesting about all this is we're sitting here in bet. This is, I think, my 21st bet, which is makes me very, very old. I was only 9 when I came to the first one, obviously. What's interesting is we've spent most of the last 20 years building the most extraordinary online learning environments. I mean, fabulous things. Schools online, you know, through to think.com, through to some of the, I mean, super learning environments that are around today. I mean, you've seen some fab projects. But what all that's allowed us to do is to be brave about learning in a way that we never could with the bricks and mortar. Now, suddenly, building schools of the future, we've got, gosh, £60 billion. That's a lot of money. £60 billion to rebuild schools. And how better to rebuild them than to recreate physically some of that extraordinary learning that we've seen happening online. So it's really interesting that the online stuff did so well because the schools were so restrictive, and now, having seen how good it can be, we're building new schools. And I just love the recursion of all that, and I love the fact that people all around the world are doing the same thing. So what I thought to show you a little bit today was some of what people are doing with radical schools around the world, and give you a sense that although we're doing exciting stuff here, we're building schools of the future, you know, out there people are doing exciting things too. And for sure, I mean, just looking around at you, you know, your shoes for sure were made in Italy, I guess, you know, stylish, you know. My jumper was probably made in China. Anne-Marie's come all the way from Ireland, you know. I mean, it's a very, you know, that's a Swiss watch. You know, Andrew at the back there is probably relaxing in, well, for sure it's an Australian shirt, you know. you know, it's a very global world. And the thought that we might be just building a national curriculum is, you know, what were we thinking? So suddenly in the 21st century, we've entered this exhilarating era of an international curriculum, of international learning, of swapping good ideas with each other. Actually, BET has become this wonderful place where people can come and talk. I was just saying to somebody this morning, BET would be best if we could just chat it for a day and just all just talk to each other and then all go away. That would be so useful, and not try and sell anything to each other or anything is sordid. So, let's have a look at what people are doing around the world, and bear with me a moment. First of all, perhaps, it's just worth a quick recap on, you know, how is this century different to the last century? It's really simple. You know, when we were here 20 years ago, we were saying, can we use any of this stuff for anything useful at all? You know, what might you do with a video disc that might be useful? You know, not a lot, to be honest. But now the technology is so cool that the question really is, what would you like to do? You know, you really can do anything. And certainly when I'm talking to ministers from countries all around the world, all I'm saying to them is, what would you like to do? You know, you have the dream, and we can do it. We absolutely can do it. And I think what's been lacking is we haven't been ambitious enough about that dream. Projects I'm involved in all around the world, you're seeing kids' performance doubling in 3 or 4 years. You're seeing massive increases in their confidence, their self-esteem. Yes, their performance and their literacy, but every other level as well. And I think where it went wrong here for us was maybe this. What we used to do here, and so last century, you know, what we used to do was find good stuff, see if we could replicate it, and then make it a little better. You know, well, that, and we'd check it was all right with Criterion referencing. The problem with that is that you trap everybody in last year's world. You know, kids can never be better than they were 3 or 4 years ago. That's not where this is all going now. Where it's going now is simply this. Choose your ambitious targets. Design to those targets, and then let's be even more ambitious the next year about the targets. And what keeps us going in all this is our economic and social planning. I was talking to a country yesterday who said to me, we don't care what it costs. Huh. Because we know we're going to get it back in 10 years in national income, which is a really refreshing and actually rather accurate analysis of educational investment, which is what all this is. So let's have a bit of a look at what people are doing around the world with all this.
in a very simple sort of way. And I brought a few examples along, of course. And just in passing, those of you who are on the other half of the stand over here, where the kids have all been just exhausted all day grilling you about your visions of the future schooling, if you go and get grilled by them, they'll give you a set of postcards which has got all the examples we're looking at here and some little bit of text about them as well. So if you want a set of postcards to take away, you'll have to go and be interviewed, and quite right too. Where should we start with all these? There are so many. I think I'm going to start with this one. It's a silly one, really, but here we are in the Caribbean, and you probably know that in 75% of UK secondary schools, I beg your pardon, in UK secondary schools, 75% of our children try and get through the school day without using the toilet. You know, it's a little tiny detail. Why don't they use the toilet? Because the toilets are industrial. They're full of bullies. They're just, what's the kid's word, minging, you know. And because they try not to use the toilet, they don't drink water. Because they don't drink water, they can't concentrate. So 75% of our secondary population in the second half of every day can't concentrate. So what we've done in the Caribbean is to put toilets in the back of every classroom. You know, one toilet, unisex toilet, and you know, it actually works. It works just the way it does at home. The boys pee on the floor, the girls give them a hard time because they know who was in there last, you know. They ran out of paper, they go to the cupboard and get paper and put it in. And it's a perfectly civilised way. And I think somehow we've got to put that civilisation back into learning. What we've built are these big industrial complexes of processing children. We've got to stop doing that. We've got to build family learning groups within the school. That's incredibly powerful in terms of making learning happen. Let me give you some examples. Here's, where should we go? Let's go to let's go to Cape Copenhagen now. One of the things you all know, because you're a BET, is that when kids are working with new technology, they put their head down and they really go for it. You know, you try and drag them away from the work that they're doing, they don't want to stop. And that was true back in 1979, and it's still true now, you know, right at the birth of BET, kids want to focus. And yet, in so many of our schools, we ring a bell, stop them doing something, take them out of that box, put them in another box. You know, here I'm studying about castles, and they work very well on top of a rock, stop, ring, down the corridor. Now I'm studying Roche Bretonnais in geography, and look, it's a rocky outcrop, but nobody puts the two together, you know. If the project is about castles, they put it all together. When they stop moving around, in terms of school design, you don't need corridors. Like, absolutely, 21st century schools do not need corridors. And the big stairwells, because you use them much more rarely, the big stairwells can double up as other things. They can double up as lecture theatre steps. They can double up as, and look how social this space is. And you know, in this school there are no naughty children out on the corridors because there aren't any corridors. Every single incidence of a child in the last 5 years in the UK who's been fatally stabbed or wounded in a UK school, it happened on the corridor, at the school gate, or on a stairwell. It's physics. You take a large volume of kids and you put them through a narrow space, you get friction. And that's friction we've added to the system absolutely unnecessarily. I don't know if you'd want to guess at what the average pupil time unit, timetable unit is in secondary schools around the world, but at the moment it's hit about 100 minutes and it's going up rapidly. So, you know, if you're ringing the bell every 35 or 40 minutes, you're just destroying their concentration time. And so, try it. Just go around the school with your kids and look at the amount of time they spend getting ready to move, moving, arriving. Basically, if you're on less than 100 minute timetable, you're burning Friday every week, just throwing away Friday, moving the kids around. Now, why? So what we're seeing around the world is people are experimenting with much bigger blocks of learning. And of course, that bigger blocks of learning includes other sorts of spaces as well. Let's have a look at this is a really interesting one. So here we are in Philadelphia, in the School of the Future, in Philadelphia. And one of the things they've noticed, because they've been looking around the world, they've noticed that drama and performance is a really useful part of science teaching. Of course it is. And we've got kids on rollerblades crashing into each other, learning about Newtonian physics. You've got kids dancing around as planets, you know, you're kind of dressed up as Saturn and I'm feeling a bit neglected as Pluto, you know. But to do that, you need performance space. Now, you look at most of our science labs, and the one thing they've got in common is everything's bolted down. What they've done here, the only things that are fixed are the three sinks. And you can see on the edge of the sinks are the gas taps. And you can take this benching away really, really. So this science lab can be reconfigured really quickly into a performance space. And we know solid research evidence that performance in science gives you better gender penetration into science, you get a lot less kids that fall out of science, and you get earlier understanding. By earlier understanding, I really mean earlier understanding. Here we are in Singapore, doing some work with kids with video in Singapore, where we ask them to video the results of their science experiments and write up their science experiments with video cameras. We found that they got to their science understanding 4 years earlier by writing it up with a video camera than they did with the traditional method. As a result, Singapore, they're putting a primary science lab into every single primary school. So, you know, all around the world, people are reaching out and being really brave with what might work and how it might work. And let's look at some of the data from all that, because it's pretty spectacular. Let's go to Australia perhaps, and here's Western Heights High School in Victoria. And Western Heights is a very conventional school, like the one that many of you are in. They wanted to parachute in that new model of learning, that project-based, mixed-age, long timetable block, home-based, collegiate, collaborative model of learning that's going so well around the world. And they did it simply by knocking out as many of the walls as they could. You see, they left a few beams up so the place didn't actually collapse, you know. And it worked pretty well. Let's have a look at the data from that place, before and after. And it's pretty impressive. If I look at, say, for example, student morale is up from 17% to, golly gosh, that's 80. I don't know if you can see that. Can you see that from the back row, the cheap seats? Good. Have a look at teacher effectiveness, up from 20% to, my goodness, 87%. I mean, you can see the figures for yourself. These figures are stellar. And I think the one thing we learn with absolute certainty is that the big gamble, the big risk, is carrying on doing it the way that we're doing it. Because everywhere where people break out of the box in terms of the curriculum, in terms of the timetable, in terms of the structure and design of their schools, the children's performance is absolutely spectacular. So building schools of the future is a fabulous opportunity for us to do it better. But you know, sometimes I sit down with heads and they say to me, great, we've got the plans for the new school, but show me where my existing timetable will fit in those plans, just to give me comfort. And I say to them every time, you know, if your existing timetable will fit in the plans, nobody should have wasted the money on building a school in the first place. You know, you've got to think different. You've got to do it differently. And that's absolutely the exciting challenge. The great thing about this is it frees a huge amount of staff time. Teachers become, you know, the day doesn't get any longer. But look at the way that you can save time. Here's a bunch of kids let's go to Singapore again. So this is Canberra Primary School in Singapore, 3,500 children. So, you know, big schools work, so do I'll show a little one in a minute. But the way they've done, this is the primary school gym, folks, you know. And a big kid works with a little kid. They both download a little clip of video from the school network on how to use the apparatus. They've got a set questions. She asks her to make sure she understands. She asks her to make sure that they both understand. And then they go into the gym and look, no adults present at all. So far, no fatalities, you know. So trusting children, informing children, giving them methods and processes really, really, really does work in freeing up staff time. In Hong Kong, a walk onto a school in Hong Kong, if I'm a kid, as I walk through the gate, the school notices. In many of our schools here, I think it's fair to say Tesco knows more at the moment about where its bottles of brandy are than we know about where our kids are. You know, but RFID card in my pocket, I walk through the school notices. If I haven't arrived within 30 minutes of the school starting, somebody sends a text message home. You think how much time we spend in our schools reconciling, you know, what you think the register is with what the register actually is, with what the parents think it is. You think of the cost of that in every school and every day. You see that technology gives us a whole lot of new ways of thinking about all this. Well, I'm going to show you one last tiny thing. We'll have a few questions and then we're out of time because these are short sessions. And then one last one I just want to show you really is there are so many, but I think I'll pick this one. It's kind of cute. This is a little tiny school in Surrey, opened 2 years ago. I'm on the board of governors. It opened with two children. Now there's been a huge increase in roles, five now. It will never have 10. And it's just had a great Ofsted inspection. It's cost effective. It really, really, really works. There are really radical ways of thinking again about how we do this. And I saw Jean Johnson here just now. Where was Jean? Is she? Oh, there she is, yeah, on the... as a BET brain. And in a minute, you get a chance to talk to these BET brains. I'll tell you about them in a second. But, you know, Jean's running a virtual school for children who have been full-time excluded from school. She's got 1,000 children who are outperforming the schools that they've been excluded from by one way or another. So, you know, there's a whole lot of new ways of doing this that really, really, really work. And none of them are expensive. They're all just the same money that it ever cost us before. So it's a pretty exciting time. We've got about 5 minutes. You can do some questions. I'm going to stop there because that's bang the end of the podcast, I expect. But ask me a few questions and I'll try and answer them. Anything. When you ask, I'll run over and point the microphone at you, or somebody will.
Is it that long? No, it won't.
You just have to shout. Ask anything you want. Apart from, can you have a free postcard? You've got to ask the kids. Yeah.
All of these innovative schools you've worked, how much say the kids have in their design?
Oh, that's really important. The pupil voice is massively important in all this. Massively important. You know, they're still kids, they're still daft as brushes sometimes, but I'll tell you what, it's what they do full time is, and if you're not engaging them in the design process, you're really, really missing a trick. We're saying to a group of children, in fact, Sharon had a school in South London, where we said to the kids, what's wrong with the design of your school? And remember one of the big kids there said to me, he said, the trouble is the people down here don't know how good we are. You know, now that sounds like a throwaway line. You think about the design of a school and think, what a poor job it does in celebrating the children's work with the community. So when the kids walk out of the school, all the community see are big kids. They don't see athletes and scientists and poets and guitar players. They just see a bunch of kids. If the school is designed to celebrate, to look outwards and celebrate what they're doing, you know, you see how little things can make just an enormous difference. Pupil voice is absolutely key. And I'll tell you what, you'll never talk to the children other than they'll tell you to do something about the toilets. Boy, are they right, you know. One more question. Yes.
How do you train the staff to go in there, and what do you do?
I don't worry about that at all anymore, but I used to. What I've seen that's given me huge encouragement is, well, look, in the Caribbean, a year ago, went into a school, the kids were absolutely rope taught, sitting in rows, being told, what, you know how bad it can be. And it was that model of delivering a curriculum, wisdom being received, is all one way. I just went back in November, and the staff said, come to our staff meeting. And they couldn't wait to show me the video work they'd be doing, filming their new ways of teaching, to share with each other that they sat and analysed, and the staff said, that's really working, that's a good idea. You know, staff care about kids, they're professionals. You know, you stand on the roof of a school and say, where's there another gang of graduates who are reflecting every day at postgraduate level about the subject they care about? And the only other place will be, it won't be a company, it won't be a bank, it'll be another school. You know, schools are full of really bright people. The problem is they've been banged into boxes and almost forgotten to use their brains. But I'll tell you what, the minute you let them go, they do absolutely fabulous things. And I'd say one other thing. We've got a super young generation of kids. They've just come into teaching. And on the one hand, these were sort of Thatcher's children who've gone through a very rigid. On the other hand, it's the first really wired generation we've had in teaching. So would they arrive saying, you must tick the boxes, I am a robot? Or would they arrive saying, hey, this is YouTube's way cool, why can't we get to it on the school network? Turns out they can do both. And they do the whole sort of curriculum efficiency, which we need. If we're going to be certain about literacy and numeracy, we need that certainty. They can do that with their hands tied behind their back, and they've still got the imagination to do the rest. And what that's done is absolutely to electrify people at the other end of their profession. Let me show you a little tiny an example of that real quick. If you've got a moment. and it's sort of here, probably. I'll show you this one. So this is, these kids are on the stand tomorrow. This is Castle Manor School. Castle Manor School got a bit fed up with assemblies because they are pretty boring. Let's start the morning with a ritual humiliation for the entire population. Why would you do that? So they said, well, why don't we just set up a school media group and have children with the responsibility for, you know, if you're the head teacher and you want to talk to the children, you make an appointment with me, my gang of kids, we'll video you, we'll do a proper interview of you. And we'll have a nice chat, you know. And by the way, if you're doing well in the netball group, I'll come and film your successes. And let's have a look at the rehearsals for the Christmas play, because they're coming on pretty well. And then we'll put the whole thing together. We'll put it into a broadcast. And you can see down here, you know, that what have they done with the broadcast? They've parked it on YouTube, and they podcast it. But rather nicely, every Friday morning, the whole school sits down to watch the broadcast, and then it's available as a podcast, and it's available on YouTube. just go and search for Castle Manor on YouTube, and you'll find every single weekly episode. There's heaps and heaps of them. Works really, really well. You know, and kids are hungry for that opportunity to share with each other their successes and their experiences as part of that community. This is information communication technology, isn't it? ICT. Let me show you one other, and then we should finish. It's a trivial one, but it's rather good fun. And here it is. I don't know how much you know about cup stacking, but it's a thing where you take plastic cups and you stack them in a particular order and then restack them again in another order. And the kids around the world are pretty fast. This is Emily Fox. She is the world champion, and she is genuinely awesome. And that was her breaking the world records. Pretty astonishing stuff, you know. Now, I found Emily by just typing in, cup stacking world record. You can find it too. But just please notice that when I typed it in, I got 52,000 other children showing their cup stacking records, you know. So this isn't about just, you know, this isn't about the systems that we've built. It's about reaching out for the systems that are already out there and making that part of our... Now, a nice little thought to take away with you is, if the extraordinary learning environments we built here at BET over the years are now being turned into physical, what will the physical schools look like that are coming about as a result of the social environments that are already out there in technology? Just go away with that sense of acceleration and a pace of change of all this. Pretty, pretty, pretty impressive. Emily Fox, Cup Stacking YouTube. Go and have a look. Thanks very much.